Hey everyone, husband here.
And I'm wife. If you've been listening to us, then you know we're all about reading the Bible and reacting to it on our first read-through. Cuss words, crying, laughing, and more.
We're passionate about creating a podcast that takes the sanctity out of the sacred text and simply stating it as we see it.
But we can't do it without your help. We're asking for your support to help us keep this podcast going.
There are two ways you can donate.
Text SACDIS, that's SACDIS, to 533-555 if you're in the U.S. with a one-time donation. Any amount helps.
Or if you'd rather start a sustaining membership, sign up on our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Membership levels start as low as $2 a month.
We are amazed and grateful for our fans that support us now, and you can become one too.
With your support, we can keep Sacrilegious Discourse alive and well for years to come.
So please donate today.
Text SACDIS to 533-555 if you're in the U.S.
Or sign up for our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
I'm husband.
And I'm wife.
Together we're reading the Bible for the very first time.
We grew up without religion and wanted to know what all the fuss was about.
Well, what have we learned so far?
That God is a dick. And apparently some people believe in talking donkeys?
We're not trying to pass ourselves off as experts.
Nope, we're just reading the Bible for the first time and giving our first take reaction.
If you'd like to join us in this venture, you might consider starting at episode 1.
Otherwise, jump in wherever you like.
Alright, let's go read the Bible.
Yeah, let's get to it. Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what today is?
Well, it is technically still Sunday, so...
Right.
That means we're doing...
Sacrilegious Book Club!
That's right. And what are we book clubbing today?
Well, we are still in this book called A Treasury of Jewish Folklore. Stories, traditions, legends, humor, wisdom, and folk songs of the Jewish people. Edited by Nathan Ozubel.
Okay.
We've read part 1, Jewish Salt. Part 2, Heroes, and Part 3, The Human Comedy.
Got it.
We are currently in Part 4, which started on page 446. That one is called Tales and Legends, and we're going to go over a couple things within that.
All right. Sounds good. You ready to do this?
I am.
Let's do it.
Okie dokie.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right. So do you remember when we were covering the 10 lost tribes of Israel?
Yes.
Because we're in chapter 3 of this part.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Chapter 1 was biblical sidelights. Chapter 2 was the world to come, which would be like what they're expecting.
Right.
And then the 10 lost tribes. And that took us a little bit like, whoa, what is happening?
Right.
And there were like all these theories about where they were. And
was this something we covered in book club?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes. It was in our last book club episode and it was a lengthy intro. And then I also did a rabbit hole about it. So we didn't actually read any stories in our last book club. We learned about what these stories are about.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, I really had a difficult time picking out just some stories that I felt would still be within the scope of our podcast.
Yeah.
And didn't get like too far astray of what we are, but still kind of gave the flavor of the book and the section that we're in.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm just prefacing all that, kind of a reminder of where we were and what we're doing.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there were some stories with intros about different countries where they might be. And we did discuss some of that in our last book club episode.
Right. Yeah.
One of the places was America, the Native Americans.
Yes.
And so I was like, I'm not reading those stories. That's just silly.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
A lot of these, too, are travel journals. And
got it.
That was like when I was in high school and my first 2 years of college. That was my very least favorite part of literature, was early American literature.
Okay.
The history things, the travel journals of people, you know, from
now,
history.
I have to say, just since we're on this note, that I do have a very favorite book or author, I should say,
mm-hmm.
Who is a travel journalist. And
oh, well, yeah.
His name is Bill Bryson.
Of course.
And if you guys have not checked him out, you should pick up a book by him, preferably A Walk in the Woods.
A Walk in the Woods.
Is like the, especially if you're in the U.S., great place.
Let me tell you how good this book is. Having just said that I don't like travel journals, I'm the one that read it before husband and introduced him to it.
Yeah.
And the audio in particular is fantastic.
Yeah,
he'll laugh
it himself,
the whole way
and
through.
He's so great.
He's really great. Bill Bryson, A Walk
Bill
in the
Bryson.
Woods.
And there's another one that I really enjoyed by him that I've read.
He's
written multiple, but I've only read a couple by him. But still, I'm going to at some point in my life read more.
Mm-hmm.
Is it called A Sunburnt Kid or something like that? It's his travel journal from Australia.
From a sunburnt country, maybe?
Something like that. But it's his travel journal from Australia. It's an excellent, excellent book as well.
And I haven't read that one. I've only read A Walk in the Woods.
Yeah, yeah. And just for the record, even if you don't like travel journals,
he's really
an amazing
good.
Writer, and he writes these journals so, so well.
Right. So when I say travel journals, I mean early American history.
Yeah,
travel
no,
journals,
I get what you mean.
Which Bill Bryson is contemporary, okay?
Yes,
he's
correct.
Modern day. He lives.
I just had to throw it out there because I love the guy.
Yeah.
You know
normally I'm the one talking about books.
Yeah, I holy shit, I recommended the book.
This probably deserves a spot on the bingo board.
Yeah.
If you know, you know.
Right, wink, right, right.
Wink.
Yeah. Discord, Tuesday nights at 10.
Yeah. So, what was I saying? Oh, so I skipped a lot of the nonsense ones.
Yes.
Is what I'm getting at here. Because the travel journals, A, they weren't interesting to me, and B, they were nonsense because
right.
we know better.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I'm going to read the introductory note to this section. The Black Jews of Abyssinia.
Okay.
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 And this introductory note to that starts on page 535.
Got it.
Okay. So we are like flying through this book, but not fast enough. What? I didn't say anything. Oh my God. Okay. The history of this Jewish tribe called Falasha in Abyssinia is still veiled in obscurity, and any attempt to investigate its origin encounters many obstacles.
Okay.
Okay. The opinion of the Abyssinians, which is partly shared also by the Falashas themselves, is that these Jews came from Palestine to Ethiopia in the time of King Solomon and his alleged son, Menelik the First.
Oh, okay.
The Ethiopian Chronicles relates the Queen of Sheba.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
That one.
Right, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So you can see why I chose this one.
Right.
I was like, I'm into this.
Yeah, it's somewhat relevant.
During her visit to him at Jerusalem, conceived a son whose father was Solomon. That the son was named Menelik or Ibn al-Hakim, that is to say, the son of the sage,
mm-hmm.
and that he became the founder of the royal dynasty of Abyssinia.
Interesting.
The Abyssinians have appropriated this legend, which draws its origin from the biblical passages of chapter 10 of the first book of Kings and from chapter 9 of the second book of Chronicles, mentioned also in our Midrashic literature, meaning our the Jewish Midrash,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Where reference is made to a queen of the south whom the Arabs claim as their own. Okay.
Interesting. I think that there was more. I mean, like, they mentioned King Solomon there, so, like, if it seems like we talked about this even outside of those books,
we did.
Somewhat.
We did. Somewhat. We did a rabbit hole on Queen of Sheba because
right,
we were like,
they're totally getting it on.
They are doing it. And yeah, there's so many legends about that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when I read this intro, I was like, oh, so we're covering this then. Because we feel like we didn't get enough. We wanted
right.
to read
no,
more
like,
about
this
her.
This was definitely a story of intrigue for me that sure. we've read through the Bible. Like, I I've often thought about that whole scenario with mm-hmm. with King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba as, like, an interesting possibility to delve mm-hmm. into later.
Well, especially knowing that he married so many from different cultures and adopted their practices.
The Queen of Sheba at that time was specifically called out mm-hmm. in the Bible.
In the Bible,
which for a woman at all is rare, mm-hmm. and to have such a high status at that, mm-hmm. with regard to the King of Jerusalem and Judah and everything,
to be referred to as a queen,
right?
Yeah,
yeah, that was rare and very unique, and then mm-hmm. just the way it all went was very interesting.
We were like, oh, they fucking
right,
yeah,
yeah.
I think I was like that.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
you were like, oh, they're totally together, and I was like, they fucking okay. So by this episode, the Abyssinians established the origin of the Falashas in their country. According to them, the Queen of Sheba, on her return to her kingdom, brought along with her a large number of Hebrews, such as scholars and artisans, and upon the birth of her son, this immigration was considerably augmented.
Hmm.
So when she took her son with her, she took a bunch of Jewish people with her.
Yeah.
And that's how they all got there, kind of thing.
Got it. Got okay? it. Yeah.
The exodus of these Jews from Palestine is explained in very amusing anecdotes. Menelik I was raised and educated at the court of Solomon at Jerusalem, and he was his father's favorite, which
sure.
he would be, right?
Yeah,
I
right.
mean, wow.
Yeah.
Like, that's super royalty, not yeah. just quasi-royalty. Because he was loved by his following on account of his being handsome and intelligent, the Israelites, fearing that he would seize the throne after the death of Solomon, insisted that the boy be sent to rejoin his mother.
Wait, why did they fear that? Because he was not born of straight-up Israeli
yeah.
descent?
Yeah.
Oh.
They're like, this kid is smart, handsome,
so there was a bit
good.
Of xenophobia going on with
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Oh,
right.
yeah. And they were like, this kid's great. Get him out of here.
right, yeah.
Yeah. Solomon reluctantly consented to their demand, but on condition that each family be required to send its firstborn son to accompany Menelik into his country and to remain there with him.
Wow.
Right? So huh. that's how she ended up with such a large amount of people
yeah,
there,
yeah,
hypothetically.
Yeah.
He had him crowned as king of Ethiopia and sent him home with a large following of thousands of Jews.
Wow.
Solomon had also prepared for him a copy of the Tables of the Law, you
okay.
know, the
right, yeah,
Torah,
yeah.
Which the priests who formed part of his escort were to take with them. Okay?
Okay.
So they were supposed to.
Yeah.
But these deceived the wise king, carried away the original from the temple, and put the copy in its place.
Oh, damn.
Remember how they were saying, we got the original over here, guys. And we're
yeah.
like, how the fuck would it get there? That's random.
Right.
This is how.
Well, we were talking about the Ark at the time.
Yeah.
So, which they wouldn't have copied the Ark. They would have copied the laws.
Right. But I mean, this kind of goes along
it goes
with that.
Kinda, it definitely increases the likelihood of that story.
Sure.
Insofar as there is any likelihood
sure.
of that story, it increases that likelihood of that story.
If they were carrying the Torah, the law, within an Ark.
Right.
With them, which I imagine they would, because.
Maybe.
I'm just saying, like, she's got this huge thousands of Jewish people traveling and, you know, King of Egypt here with her, you know.
Right.
Like, he's going this a ways, and I'm sure that it was, like, part of their ceremonial travel-y thing that I'm imagining.
But I don't think you would use the Ark of the Covenant as the transport for a copy of the Torah. You would merely.
No. I'm saying they would have created, like, King Solomon would have said, here's your copy of the Torah, and here is your copy of an ark fanciness to carry it in.
You think they copied the ark, huh?
Not like copied it, but duplicated, like made a fancy carrying thing for it. Okay. They had the instructions.
Right. Okay.
Why have the instructions if you're not going to build another?
I don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I think those priests went in and switched it all out and took it back to Ethiopia with them. What? The tables of the law of Moses, thus stolen from Jerusalem, may be found to this very day, the Abyssinians assure us, in the church of Zion at Aksum, the ancient capital of Ethiopia and the residence of Menelik the First.
I am, this story still very much intrigues me with regard to the possibility that they still have this thing currently there.
Yeah, and that we can't just walk over there and be like, I just want to look at it.
Yeah.
Can I tear off a piece and take back for them to study?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Like, this is for realsies, Moses' thing? What?
Yeah, why can't anybody see it?
Yeah.
It sounds to me like you're lying, but whatever. I mean, like, you just let somebody in to see it that's like a, you know, really reliable source.
Yeah.
You know, just, I'm not asking you to open it up to the public. Just somebody that's a reliable source.
Yeah, let's all pick one and be like, this is the dude.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
The dude. An opinion which appears to be more historical is that the Falashas are the descendants of those Jews who settled in Egypt after the first exile, and who, upon the fall of the Persian domination on the borders of the Nile, penetrated into the Sudan, whence they went into the western parts of the present country of Abyssinia. So either way, a bunch of Jews went that a ways.
Got it.
Okay. Okay. When they directed their steps toward the interior, and in time after the destruction of the second temple, their number was augmented by fugitives who came to join them. For upon the shores of the Red Sea and in the whole of Egypt, the Jews whose land had been destroyed by the Romans continued to suffer from persecution. Then, towards the end of the 5th century of the Common Era, the captive Jews led away from southern Arabia, following the wars of the Abyssinians against the Himyarites, augmented the number of these Jews who already resided in Ethiopia.
Okay.
So multiple waves of people headed that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
There they formed themselves into groups, then gathered in the same provinces, almost in the same centers, and became fused into a single and indissoluble community, protected by the mountains and supported by natives converted to Judaism. They finally became grouped into a small independent state, and this independence they maintained in several parts of the empire for hundreds of years. It is approximately only since the past two centuries that the Falashas have become scattered throughout the entire extent of Abyssinia in little groups and families, and today they are also met with in the most southern provinces of the empire, in Choa, in the country of the Galas, and even in the equatorial regions.
Equatorial?
That's what I said. Equatorial, sorry. Which have but recently come under the suzerainty of the Negus.
Okay.
Where they live outwardly as Christians, as did the Muranos in Spain.
Okay.
Their occupation, originally that of military mercenary service under the different sovereigns, and later trade on the banks of the Nile and on the littoral, I can't say that word properly, sorry, of the Red Sea, is mainly agriculture and manual labor. They are in their country almost the only people who are able to follow with any skill the trades which are practiced in Abyssinia. And thanks to their skill, they are on good terms with their non-Jewish compatriots. Compatriots?
Okay. Whatever.
Abyssinia needs the Falashas, who furnish the articles indispensable for the maintenance of the country. In Abyssinia, as in many other places, the masses of the people are in perfect harmony with the Jews, whom they hold in esteem because of their open spirit and their industry. Okay?
Okay.
So that was an interesting little piece of history travel guide for you.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
So There was a story that was written called A Visit to the Falashas, which I'm not going to read.
Okay.
I'm telling you about it because what I just read was the intro to this story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this guy, he goes and he gets kidnapped and he's just talking about the people that as he sees them.
Got it.
And some of it's not complimentary is why I'm kind of skipping over it.
Okay.
He's just, I don't know. I didn't care for that.
Got it.
So we're skipping it.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to a different note now, and I will read the story after I read this intro.
Okay.
So now we're on page 540, and this intro is called The Beni Israel Jews of Bombay.
Okay.
Okay. Today, the Beni Israel Jews who live in the Bombay Presidency of India number little more than 10,000. For the greater part, they are poor and ignorant, unskilled workers and are considered among the lowest castes of the population.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Superficially, there is very little to distinguish them from other Indians. They bear Hindu names, wear Hindu clothes, and speak the vernacular of the country. Nevertheless, they consider themselves as a people apart. On the Sabbath day, they do not work and attend services in their synagogues. The other Indians call them derisively Shanwar Talis or Saturday Oilmen.
Hmm. Okay.
Because most of the Beni Israel earn their livelihood as oil pressers and they rest on the Sabbath.
Okay.
The tradition of the Beni Israel is that their ancestors had left Palestine after the invasion of Antiochus Epiphanes in 175 BCE.
Got it.
Okay. They had fled in a ship and traveled by way of Egypt and the Red Sea to India. But a storm arose and they were shipwrecked on the Konkan coast near the ancient city of Chul, which is 30 miles south of Bombay.
Okay.
Okay. During the shipwreck, they lost their Torah scrolls.
Oh, no.
I know. That's a bummer.
Terrible.
A misfortune over which they still mourn. I would kind of be sad about that, too.
Yeah.
In the course of time, they forgot many of the Jewish rites, customs, and prayers. Of the last, they remembered only the Shema, the Jewish creed. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. This they repeated in Hebrew on every religious occasion during the rite of circumcision at weddings and at funerals. Their traditions were handed down from father to son with a stubborn fidelity despite the vicissitudes and persecutions they had to suffer since early days. That their claim of having left Palestine before the dispersion has historical validity may be seen from the biblical character of some of their customs relating to birth, marriage, and death, of the nature of the fasts and feasts they celebrate, and of the rites and ceremonies they perform. For instance, their offering of frankincense in their synagogue service is identical to the rite which prevailed in Palestine up to the time of destruction of the Second Temple. It is of considerable significance that the Beni Israel remained ignorant of Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights, which was introduced by Judah Maccabeus after he resurrected the temple in 168 BCE.
Oh, okay.
They were also unaware of the temple's sack by Titus in AD 70.
Okay.
It is interesting to note that there are two classes of Beni Israel Jews, a natural consequence of the caste-ridden social organization of the Indian people. One class is called the Gora, or White Israel. Its members consider themselves, quote, the real Beni Israel. The other is the Kala Israel. It consists of Black or Indian proselytes to Judaism. Of course, it has to be that way.
It's got to be about race. Yeah.
While there is no distinction made between the two groups in religious observance, nonetheless, intermarriage between them is strictly prohibited by the Gora Israel, who are pridefully determined to preserve their group purity.
Oh my God.
Fucking white people. In recent times, this division has caused a great deal of bitterness and indignation on the part of the socially inferior Kala Israel group.
You think?
I would think so too, yeah.
Just recently though, huh?
Yeah. No doubt the Beni Israel Jews would have disappeared long ago as a religious and ethnic culture group had it not been for the fact that many hundreds of years ago, some say 500, others say 900, there appeared in the Konkan country a half-legendary character by the name of David Rahabi. He taught them many of the tenets of Judaism to which, in their, quote, naive and primitive fashion, they have clung tenaciously ever since.
Okay. I thought they were clinging to them because they were formerly Jewish.
Right.
But now they're saying somebody showed up and taught them.
Right.
So which is it exactly?
Well, I think that they were holding on to whatever they remembered after having lost the stuff, and then probably were like getting absorbed by the cultures around them until this visitor came around or something. Okay. I don't know. Right. I don't know. I mean, it's another like travel journal, so it's not quite necessarily 100% legit.
Right.
So we're going to read a Beni Israel circumcision party.
Oh, because
everybody loves to hear about getting the skin of your dick chopped.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast.
I thought our listeners would enjoy that.
Yeah.
And this starts on page 541.
Okay.
Okay. A male child is circumcised on the eighth day after his birth, and then he receives his name. The child is circumcised by his father if he is a good operator. Otherwise, it is circumcised by the hazan, or the reader of the synagogue, or by any operator from the community.
Okay.
I don't know what they mean by operator, like person who can like handle the scissors good. Like, is that what they mean?
I don't know.
Like, I just don't. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how it works. Like, isn't it supposed to look like a wine opener kind of thing? And it just like a cigar?
I don't know.
Chop.
I don't know.
You're getting sick. Oh, my God. No. Guys, if you could just see husband, he's turning green. Mm. The operator is called Mohel, i.e. a circumciser.
Okay.
So the circumciser is called a circumciser.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. The fee paid to the synagogue on the occasion varies from rupees 2 to 5. Okay.
Sure.
The mahal, which is, you know, the circumciser.
Yeah.
Receives from rupee 1 to rupees 2 from the father of the child.
Okay.
I love that they're telling us the prices here
in
this story.
It really holds no weight because it probably has changed since.
Not only that, but I don't know how a rupee lines up with my dollars.
Right.
So it means nothing.
Yeah.
In other countries, the mahel receives no fee. A mahel always longs to circumcise as many children as is the numerical value of his name.
I just live to cut dicks.
I love cutting dicks. I cannot wait to exercise. Line them up. Line them up. Chop, 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 chop. Done.
Oh,
I like it that it has to... The number that he does has to match the numerical value of his name.
Yeah.
Like, that's Kabbalah magic number stuff.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
The Mohel Judah David Ashkenazi, a Cochin Jew, used to circumcise children in Bombay, both among the Beni Israel and other Jews, without any fee. The circumcision is performed either at home or in the synagogue. Relatives, friends, and acquaintances only are invited on the occasion of circumcision. So it's like a real hoedown birthday party kind of thing.
Right, right. You know? Yeah.
The evening before the day of circumcision, a few men go to the place where the child is to be circumcised and place a chair near the wall at the west side. Do you know what the chair is for?
I have no idea.
Who sits in that chair?
Oh, that's for God.
No, it's not God. It's his rep.
Oh, an angel?
No, I'll tell you.
Okay.
I'll tell you. I really thought you would remember this.
I do remember them having an empty chair available, but I can't remember exactly.
You'll remember what this, and then you'll kick yourself.
Okay.
If the circumcision is to be performed in a synagogue, a chair is placed to the left side of the ark in memory of Elijah the prophet. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
He shows up at every circumcision.
That's right. I forgot.
Circumcision.
We covered that at some point in some... I don't remember what we were talking about.
It was
in
the Bible,
covered that,
though.
Right.
Yeah.
Was it in the Bible? Or was that a deep dive into something?
Some of it was in the Bible, and then some of it was one of these stories, I think, actually.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Who is called the angel or messenger of the covenant.
Got it.
That's who he is. And is said to come along with the child and to be present at every circumcision.
Got it. And is that Elijah or Elijah?
Jah.
Jah.
Elijah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
A copy of the scriptures is placed upon the chair, which is covered with a silk or cotton curtain left hanging from the wall. Mm. A table covered with white cloth is placed at some distance from the chair, and a citron and a twig of subja or myrtle are placed thereon. And a citron is just a type of citrus fruit.
Got it.
Between the table and the chair dedicated to the memory of the prophet Elijah, two other chairs are placed in front of each other, one for the circumciser and the other for Sandrak, the godfather.
Okay. All right.
I said Sandrak, but it's Sandak.
Got it.
Apologies. I added an R where there was none.
Right.
On the morning of the circumcision, the child is taken in a palanquin or in a carriage to the synagogue, accompanied by friends and relatives. The mother remains at home, mm-hmm. as she may not enter the synagogue before the purification, which takes place on the 40th day, you know, because her pussy's still sore from having delivered. She's probably glad. She's probably like, I didn't want to go anyway, fuckers. Right,
yeah.
But the fact that she's not allowed pisses me off.
But you're taking an 8-day-year-old or an 8-day baby mm-hmm. into a place and without the mom.
Yeah.
Seems kind of dumb. Like, it seems just pointlessly
cruel.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, they consider her still unclean.
Yeah, well.
That's disgusting to me that they think that.
Oh, I agree.
If the circumcision is delayed owing to the child's illness, you know, if it
sure.
catches sick in the first 8 days of life.
Right, right.
She takes her child to the synagogue on the 40th day after the birth.
Okay.
So I would be like, he's sick.
Right.
He can't go right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like giving my husband the side eye.
Right.
On the entrance of the party into the compound of the synagogue, On the entrance of the party into the compound of the synagogue, should be a comma, juice of dry grapes or raisins and a plate containing a cup of oil and a piece of lint or some cotton are taken inside and placed on the table where two candles are lit. I bet the lint and cotton are to soak up that blood.
Mm.
Ew. Yeah. The child is generally carried from or to the palanquin or the carriage into or from the synagogue by the maternal uncle.
Mm.
So I hope mommy has a brother,
Right? Yeah, like that.
Like, what if mommy has no brothers?
I'm sure they've got a backup, like, hierarchy that gets followed. So
this is the one standing in place for the brother I don't
right.
have.
Right, yeah.
Because, you know, I'm just a girl.
Yeah.
That's all that you'll let me be. The actual ceremony is being performed according to the usual Jewish ritual. You know how it
the
goes.
Usual, yeah.
Yeah, the usual.
We'll one. Have the huge thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Presents are given to the child by its relatives after...
That child that's 8 days old or even 40 days old gives a shit.
Right.
Right.
After the circumcision is over. I just find that hilarious. Like, my dick hurts, but thanks for the blankie.
Right.
My dick hurts, but I really appreciate this new pajamas.
Right, right.
They are in cash or consist of ornaments of gold or silver. Batas, or sugar cakes, are then distributed, and the party breaks up. Some of the relatives accompany the child home, where they cut the citron, break a coconut or two, and invoke Elijah the prophet.
Mm.
Pieces of citron and caramel are then distributed to the party. A cock is killed on this occasion. Not a dick. A rooster. I had to read that sentence
chop
twice.
Chop a cock. Kill a cock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chop a cock.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, a rooster, yeah. a man hen,
right.
is killed on this occasion, cooked and given to the circumciser and members of the family. But the parents of the circumcised child do not partake of it.
Okay.
Don't eat that. That's for the dick cutter.
Like, ceremony is just... Ceremony in general
is so
always so weird.
Weird
to me. Like, why do we have to stand on ceremony, right?
Like, what's that for? Why do we do that?
Right.
You know?
It look, I get traditions and I get things like that somewhat make some sense because we want to celebrate certain things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I just never, even modern traditions, even modern ceremonies,
mm-hmm.
I question the validity of them because it's not... There's not really a need for it. It's making something more officious than it actually needs to be.
I have always said that tradition is a lazy way of saying we can't think of a way to do it better and we don't feel like it.
Right. And I have, if you enjoy a tradition, I have no problem with tradition, but don't pretend that it has to be done that way.
It has to be done this way.
Because that's just not true.
Like, one year I wanted to get a Christmas tree, one of those upside down ones that you hang from the ceiling.
Right.
And everybody gave me shit for it and were like, that's not a Christmas tree. That's, you can't do that. That's not, but tradition. And I'm like, I'm celebrating Christmas. I'm decorating it. What the fuck is the difference?
Right.
Like, I think it's funny and cool. And now that I'm like super atheist hardcore and understand how ridiculous Christmas trees are even more than I already thought, like now I'm even more.
Like, I wish I could go back and get that goddamn upside down Christmas tree.
Right?
Man.
Yeah. I would tell some people too. I would be like, actually, it's against your religion to have one at all. So. You know, you really shouldn't criticize mine when you're not supposed to have it in the first place.
Right, right, yeah.
Fees are demanded by the Qadi and the synagogue officers on the occasion of birth, marriage, and death, but no registers are kept.
Okay.
Give me some money.
So basically, they launder the money. They're like,
right?
We need some money. We're not going to actually write down what we took from you, so
no receipts.
End up in my pocket.
Yeah. No receipts. Yeah. The ceremonial is the same when the circumcision is performed at home, because that was all at the synagogue.
Yeah, yeah.
On the morning of the 12th day, the child is bathed and laid in a cradle with the repetition of the word B'Shem Adonai, that is, in the name of God. You know, Adonai is God.
Yeah.
One or two songs are then sung to lull the child to sleep, and at other times a pretty lullaby is always repeated while it is being rocked to sleep.
Mm.
But on the first occasion when the child is being put into the cradle, a coconut or two are broken and their water is sprinkled on all sides. And the coconut kernels and sugar are handed round to the children of the house.
That sounds like a dangerous idea because some people are actually allergic to coconut, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And if your baby happens to be allergic to coconut, you might have just like
killed it. Yeah.
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 That sounds like bad practice to me.
I mean, I guess you'll find out.
I guess so.
And then I guess you can yell at the circumciser and say it was his fault, right?
Right. All right. I think that was what you had for us today. Is that correct?
That is what I had for us today. That is correct.
All right. So that's our book club for this Sunday. I will be getting the weekly wrap up out here in just a few. Mm-hmm. And then we will be back tomorrow, probably a little bit later than normal, but we will be back tomorrow with our
Jeremiah chapter 31.
All right. We'll see you guys then.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end?
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.